Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Smart Firefighting Podcast. I am your host, Kevin Sofen. Here at the Smart Firefighting Podcast, we bring practical innovation to life for first responders. We break down the research roadmap for smart firefighting, published in 2015 by the National Fire Protection Association, NFPA, and the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST. We bring in entrepreneurs, fire chiefs, thought leaders, and really smart people to bring you value around innovation in smart firefighting. Make sure to follow us on social media and let us know what you think. Welcome back, Smart Firefighting community. Today, we're going to have a conversation with Gary Baum. Gary is an experienced secondary and collegiate level educator with a proven history in education management and leadership development fields. Gary has been a firefighter for over 20 years and has an incredible insight around the pros and cons of Class A and Class B foam. Gary's going to give some unique insights to how we can use Class A foam for not just suppressing fires, but also mitigating carcinogen exposure. Cancer is one of the fastest growing causes of deaths for firefighters, and this is now a new concept using proven technology to mitigate this. Gary's going to give some insights to the research that he's done firsthand and give some ideas to those sitting on the fence about if they should consider this or not and what to look forward to in 2022. Hope you enjoy listening to this and take care. Gary Baum, welcome to the Smart Firefighting Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm blessed. Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Where in the world are you located?
Currently, I'm in Redick, Illinois. The deputy fire chief down here. I've been here since 2018. I've been in the fire service for a little over 20 years, almost 21 years.
That's amazing. Thank you for your service.
I'm a volunteer. By career, I'm a high school teacher. I taught freshman physics and chemistry for 18 years. And for the last 16 years, I've taught a high school fire science program where we teach kids on the skills and cognitive information to become certified firefighters.
So you're quite a bit involved with all things training and educating firefighters, and then also have been heavily involved in terms of some of the research around cancer in the fire service and even at the intersection of using foam. And it's been interesting. I think we've seen a lot of this negative backlash about the negative impacts of foam on the fire service and the issues of PFAS and whatnot. And so with all this talk around cancer in the fire service and how they're hazardous to human health, I'd love if we could kind of start diving into of how does this idea of using Class A foam that's used in most of these CAF systems kind of differ from some of the different ARF and some of these dangerous chemicals that have fluorine in it. And maybe for those of us that don't even know what that is, maybe start with kind of painting a broad picture of what is the kind of the macro problem here that exists and elaborate on some of that.
I think the biggest problem is just a lack of education. There's a lot of fire service members that don't really know that there's a Class A foam and a Class B foam. And you interface them, and the only thing they know about foam, Class foam, is what they see on the TV for the lawsuits against, you know, the three main manufacturers in those commercials. The big difference between Class A foam and, let's just call them, legacy Class B foams is your fluorinated surfactants is fluorine. Both class of foams have a Class A component to it, because Class A foam is just really a high-tech detergent. And so the chemical makeup of the detergent are hydrocarbon-based surfactants. And there's all different kinds of hydrocarbon-based surfactants, and those then have different functions. Some of them are for to make, you know, really good bubbles. Other of them are wetting agents, and all of them have an affinity for carbon. It doesn't work in a Class B fuel spill because we want to suppress the carbon, thus enter fluorine. And so they took the fluorinated surfactants, added it to the Class A foam, and it's the fluorine that creates the film that we all know now as aqueous film-forming foam. So fluorine doesn't like carbon, and fluorine really doesn't like water, because a lot of fluorinated surfactants are actually used in water-repellent clothing. If you remember the old Scotchgard product back way ago, that was, you know, sprayed on upholstery and whatever else to help shed dirt, moisture, etc. And that's the issue with fluorine. Of course, when you're talking about the products named in the lawsuit, you're talking about PFAS and PFOA. Those are just two of thousands of fluorinated compounds that fall under the umbrella of PFAS. So PFAS, there's thousands of chemicals out there. And you could go and do a search engine and type in PFAS in food packages, and you'll be on, you know, what's, and it's also enclosed. So it's just one of those situations where, as the AFOAM authority president and as an organization, we're out to educate firefighters on Class A foams, the legacy Bs, and of course now the new fluorine-free or non-fluorinated Class Bs that are on the market. That is going to continue to change fire service because, again, film's gone. And so you have to understand how these new foams work.
You mentioned the need for Class B based on the type of fire that we're fighting. But why, what are some of these alternatives in terms of, you talked about fluorine-free foams. What are some of these alternatives that are on the horizon that can still accomplish that suppressant and ability to take down a fire without needing to use some of these forever chemicals?
Well, I mean, let's face it. I mean, the fluorinated foams work. They work very well. But as you see legislation passed, whether it's at the state or the federal level, they're working those compounds out of firefighting foam. So an alternative has to be developed. And you're seeing that in the military, they're working on changing over the aviation response. And of course, then that's going to impact industrial and municipal branches. So they have to come up with chemicals that are going to have to shed carbon to provide some level of separation between air and the fuel vapors, whether it's gasoline, diesel. And of course, the monster that changed it all is your alcohol-based spills, whether it's methanol. And so now you're seeing not only alternatives or replacements for AFFF, you're now seeing replacements for alcohol-resistant AFFF.
Okay.
And those are all basically varying forms and actually additions of even different kinds of hydrocarbon-based surfactants that don't like carbon and will shed carbon or prevent carbon. And the big difference is with the old legacy foams, even the new Gen X foams that have fluorine, the fluorine provided the film suppressed the carbon. And that's, you know, where you would actually see the fire get put out in front of the foam blanket because the fluorine's racing. That's all gone. And the fire is going to get put out from the foam out of the bubble structure as it suppresses that vapor blanket through the foam.
And I think we could spend a whole another hour just talking about the use case and applications of Class A versus Class B foam from putting out fire perspective. But one of the interesting dynamics, and we've seen this a lot within firefighter health and wellness, we've seen a huge rise, unfortunately, in different deaths and illnesses, and particularly some arising from cancer in the fire service. And there's been a growing and kind of evolving discussion about how we can use foam to mitigate some of these risks, particularly in the fire grounds, where I'm looking in my apartment right now and just think about from the table to the carpet to the bed to the mattress and all these things that, especially even lightweight construction material, that have all these different chemical compounds that are inside of them that when they burn, create a range of different hazards, and can only imagine what that does to first responders with aggregate exposure over time. Paint a picture to me of sort of your research that you've done about why we're not talking about just using foam to put out fires, but also now looking at how we can use foam to help mitigate and prevent exposure first responders that are around some of these post-fire incidents.
So this all started 8-9 years ago as I was doing some research on firefighting foams because I was ignorant, done a lot of reading, and I kept reading that Class A foam had an affinity for carbon. And so, again, I don't have a master's or bachelor's in chemistry, but I know enough understanding of chemistry that affinity means affection or draw to. And as I started to do more and more research, it just kind of dawned on me that, well, this is really true. And there's potential that we could use Class A foams in a three-dimensional environment. It should theoretically scrub carcinogens out of the smoke. And I remember reading one article that the Navy had actually been doing some tests and using Class A CAF to scrub carbon dioxide smoke. And I thought, wow, that's an interesting concept. So as I dug into it, finally began to understand one very basic component of chemistry is that likes like. So our carcinogens, benzene, formaldehyde, the whole gauntlet that is listed in a paper that UL did in 2010, those are all hydrocarbon-based toxins, carcinogens that come out of synthetic materials. And as you just said, we live in a synthetic environment. Everything we pretty much have is synthetic, even our vehicles. And I always say, I mean, understand what new car smell is or new carpet smell. That's the off-gassing of those very compounds because they're new. So the thought process is then if hydrocarbon-based carcinogens are attracted to hydrocarbon-based surfactants, which make up our class A foams, it would be theoretical that we could scrub smoke. And a lot of it too is, as we all know, if you've ever had, you know, dirty hands and we're going to go wash our hands, we use hand soap or hand detergent and we start scrubbing and all of a sudden the foam bubbles start turning brown, you know, dark. And that's because the hydrocarbon detergent has an affinity for the carbon-based dirt, grime, grease, whatever that's on our hands. And that's how our hands get cleaner. So putting that into a three-dimensional environment where we have a structure fire and everything is in the ceiling. And, you know, some of the chemicals that we talk about, like benzene, toluene, formaldehyde, at, you know, normal temperature and pressure, those are liquids. Benzene is a liquid, formaldehyde is a liquid. So, but in a superheated environment, there's not enough oxygen that for them to burn clean, they're in the smoke. And on top of that, so is all the other particulate mass that comes out of the sulfas that are also potentially carbon-based or are carbon-based, and of course, potentially have carcinogen. Those are all suspended in smoke because they can't burn and they sit in that atmosphere and just churn because we don't have complete combustion. And again, by injecting that into that atmosphere, we can literally scrub smoke. And so that's the component behind the research, class A foam via CAFs.
You say scrub this smoke. Walk me through that work. I mean, was that sort of you're walking into a post-fire incident and you're literally just like spraying the air, spraying the
surface? Actually, we're talking about using it via your, it's actually your attack agent. So, and what we teach, and CAFS was always designed as an outside-in attack approach. And so we've been working on a process of, you know, starting your fire attack outside. So you have a second-story bedroom that's involved, and you take your CAF stream from outside and do transitional attack, except this time with CAFs, class A CAFs. So not only are we cooling the environment, and you know, we'll go with Madrigalski's report 2017 that said comparing just water to class A CAFs, gas cooling was similar. That's right out of the abstract from the paper. So if something is similar in cooling and is something that's one-third of the amount of water, then I would introduce class A CAFs. Get a really good shot into that environment. So not only are we cooling the gas, but now at the point with the evidence we have, you're actually making that atmosphere cleaner of the carcinogen-based compounds that are in the smoke. And then from there, you work your way up. And then a lot of fire departments will teach what they call as cool as you go, which is, you know, you spray the ceilings as you move down with water, cool the stuff off. We say scrub as you go. Not only are we cooling the atmosphere off, but now we're injecting that class A CAFs into that smoke package, and we're literally scrubbing the smoke right out of the carcinogens right out of the smoke. And, you know, there's a lot of people that have been around long enough, they know if you've ever lose CAFs and you come out and you rinse your bunker gear off, it's like amazing and how clean your gear got. And again, it's the detergent component of class A foam.
And I've been watching the Detroit Carruthers and the Neil Brooks of the world who speak a lot about this. And you know, for example, they talk about seeing a large reduction in smoke being emitted from a fire once a class A foam, CAFs foam bottles are sprayed into the fire ground. Is that's sort of what you're alluding to? And is that kind of consistent?
Absolutely. Yeah. There is a definite difference that you can see visually, but we've been using a specific monitor to measure benzene in the pre and post suppression environment. And we have, you know, strong documentation that when you're comparing just water versus class A CAFs, the benzene reductions in post suppression environment are amazing.
And the class A foam world does seem to be large, and there's many types of foams. And you mentioned earlier, some are better for bubbles and some are better for maybe the kind of little widespread suppression. And I mean, for the layman or someone kind of interested in learning more about foams, what are the biggest differences just within class A that can help drive and, you know, accomplish some of these different initiatives you're talking about?
Well, there's some that have some basic formulations. So there's a few companies out here that'll have several different lines of class A foam. And a lot of it just has to do with what's its intended purpose, whether it's just going to be a nozzle aspirated foam. There's other ones that are specifically dialed in for wildland because they have to pass the QPL from US Forest Service. Others are just specifically designed for CAFs, which are going to be battled for bubble function, because as we all know, CAFS, it really is all about the bubbles. And so we've used several, and we can see the difference. And I know you talking to Troy and Neil, I know they have a specific type brand that they like, and a lot of it has to do with bubble structure. But in our research, the number of foams that we have tried, we cannot see any significant difference by brand or manufacturer on the carcinogen reduction levels. They all work very similarly. And again, it's just the detergents, the hydrocarbon surfactants that are in that foam that's helping scrub that environment.
And with actually visualizing, experiencing that scrub, I know a lot of times firefighters now are carrying infrared cameras and gas meters. It's sort of like the norm where all firefighters have this now. I'm kind of trying to in the field experience and see maybe the reduction of what this type of mitigation of carcinogen looks like from Class A foam. Is this something through like gas meters that when they're going in, they can actually sort of see and experience and visualize that with their gas detectors? I mean, is there any kind of testing that's showing sort of before and after versus using foam versus not using foam from just...
Yes, we've done that here. That's what we've done. And a lot of our tests are right about the time of suppression in our burn cell. And just to give you a background, we have a 20-foot container where we've built a cell into the front end of it. It's got a steel front wall, the door, and we have built tracks in. So we slide oriented strand board, OSB plywood, into the sides, the back wall, and the ceiling. And we put a quantity of straw and a pallet in it, light it on fire. And within a few minutes, we're seeing benzene readings well over 5,000 parts per million. We've seen benzene readings as high as 13,000 parts per million within just a few minutes. When we open up the door and spray the atmosphere, we always start at the ceiling. We work our way down, whether it's water or CAFS, 20 seconds of flow. We use the same hose, the same nozzle, the same technique, the same nozzle person. We've tried to eliminate variables. And Kevin, I can tell you that actually in some instances, if you put the fire with water, benzene readings will actually continue to go up. Where we put the fires out with Class A CAFS, the numbers just tumble down to where you're at minimal readings within just a couple of minutes. And so we use what's called a Miran Sapphire. It's FTI technology, infrared technology. It's a very robust system. It's designed to measure these kinds of compounds. And then I personally have done some tests in 2019 using your standard four gas meters, and they are not, I repeat, not accurate for fire ground personnel to use to go ahead and say it's okay to take your mask off. And a lot of it has to do with the technology. A four gas meter is designed to read CO, hydrogen cyanide. Those are really actually pretty simple compounds. When you start looking at benzene and formaldehyde and all of these other polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, those instruments aren't designed to read those. And in 2010, UL released a study on smoke and carcinogen exposure to firefighters, and even states in the abstract that using, your standard four gas meter and having zero readings for CO and zero readings for hydrogen cyanide is not accurate to tell you to go ahead and take your mask off, because the other compounds can still be there. And so a lot of it just is, leave your mask on, stay on air, and when you come outside, deal with it there.
Yep, very true. I mean, just those gas detectors were not designed to detect all those other synthetics that you mentioned. Yes. Like I said, I look around my apartment and there's a lot of new risk in there. And everything you paint, this picture you paint, I mean, it seems like, oh, wow, like there's all these advantages. And I want to jump into that. I guess one quick question I had is the use of the foam. I know people, when they hear CAFS, they think expensive, but does it have to be a CAFS unit, or can you use some of the foam adapters or for some of the foam injection just kind of at the nozzle point? Is that just as effective, or does it have to be CAFS?
Well, we've really been working on CAFS right now. We've done a couple of fires with just what we would call nozzle aspirated foam. We've seen some similar results, but again, it's two fires where with CAFS and water, I've got 40 fires of each or 50 fires of each. So to say out in front, yeah, we can go with it. That's down the road. That's one of our next lines of research that we want to look at. Is it, really is the foam, or is it the bubbles, or is it both? If you do have, to me, if all you have is Class A foam concentrate, use it. It's going to work. It's going to help. It's better than just water. And again, you have to understand the fire triangle. You have fuel, air, heat, right? The only thing that water can do is attack heat. So now you have all of those carcinogens that are suspended in smoke, especially the ones that want to be liquid at ambient temperature. And they're suspended up there because their molecular structure is increased. As we know, warm stuff goes up, correct? Mm-hmm. Cool that, and those molecular structures contract and they meet back to their ambient temperature, they're going to come down. And if you can think of it, it's like carcinogenic rain or toxic rain. All this stuff now that was suspended in the ceiling is now coming down. And if you're in that compartment, when that occurs, that's going to get into your gear. And that's where we're seeing, you know, a lot of the contamination of firefighter gear. So again, using those compounds to help scrub that stuff out of the environment as you work through the suppression activities is a benefit.
And so I know, as I touched on earlier, I mean, CAFs in some regards can be a price barrier. And maybe you talked about the kind of the nozzle aspirated foams as better than nothing, but still needs more research. But either way, it does seem like we need to continue to explore all different options to keep first responders safer. And we need to do everything we can to be proactive to prevent a lot of these different occupational risks that they're being exposed to. What's your thoughts on, initially you mentioned education is what's needed, but what, it's almost the end of 2021, 2022. I mean, do you see this as something that could gain more traction? And what needs to, you mentioned education and I'm repeating myself, but what sort of preventing this conversation about using Class A foam for good from going more mainstream and having this be something that can really be part of the overall health and wellness discussion for first responders?
Well, I think an agency needs to get behind it and revalidate the research that we've done to, you know, come up with it, whether it's a NIOSH or some of those lines. I know I've sent the information forward. I've had communications with them, but it really hasn't gone anywhere else. We're just going to continue to provide data. We've got the AFOAM Authority Symposium coming up in April, the weekend in front of FDIC here in Redick. Our hope is to get, you know, firefighters to come in and show them and actually engage them in the stuff that we're discussing, that we're researching, so they can actually see it for themselves. And then they can go back and spread the word. So it's just trying to get to an audience. You know, UL and the NIST studies have been around for over 10 years, and you still have firefighters in the fire service that are adamant that that's not real science, that they don't believe in that, and you'll always have that element. So, you know, right now our focus is to get that 15 or 20% that are open-minded enough to take a look at it and see the results and then take it back and apply it for their own purposes. Sorry for that.
And I think, how do we break some of the cultural dynamics here? I mean, I think a lot of times we hear that phrase of 100 years of tradition unimpeded by progress. I know people hate to hear that. I do as well. But how do we break and change some of that cultural mindset about this is something new and it has proven value to actually help prevent carcinogen exposure? And again, coming back to education, that's important. But what are some of the ideas you have on how we better change and break the stigma around why this is not just like a science, you know, a funky science project?
Well, I mean, we, again, as a high school fire science instructor, I have juniors and seniors in high schools. So this is part of what I teach. And so the main concept is start young. This needs to be engaged in, you know, state fire academies and state curriculum, you know, because of the knowledge for this. And it's also good, goes back to the conversation we had a little earlier, Kevin, the difference between Class A and Class B foams and the legacy foams and the new fluorine-free foams, because that's going to continue to be an issue for the next 10 or 15 years. And as states like Illinois, Wisconsin's already banned it, you know, what do we do with these legacy foams once we can't use them anymore? So that's a component to it as well. We also need to get out and market through, you know, your digital media. Components like this, you know, like what we're doing right now with Darley. You have a number of followers that will hopefully watch this podcast. And, you know, some of them will tweak their interest and hopefully they can reach out. Also, too, we've created through the AFOAM Authority what we call the Traveling Roadshow. It's basically the clean work component where we'll come out and, you know, based upon how much time you want to spend, we will provide that training for you. And when, if possible, we'd even include some hands-on component to it as well. So it's really, it's getting the word out. It's trying to focus on a lot of fronts. We need the AFOAM Authority. We need the fire service industry. We need Darley. the other apparatus manufacturers, the foam promotioner, the foam concentrate industry to, you know, get behind us, because we're all in this together. Because if people aren't getting it, then they're not going to buy products. And then it becomes a financial issue for the manufacturers. So yeah. I think the other thing too is we have to take a look at what the rest of the world is doing in regards to using alternative suppression systems. And
what is the rest of the world doing around alternative
suppression? Well, there's CAFs, you know, like Hong Kong. I was over there in 2018 and presented on this. You know, Hong Kong, I think, has like 88 fire engines. Every one of their engines is compressed air foam. You know, the Berlin Fire Brigade, that's a major city in Europe, their CAFs. Other systems are like the ultra high pressure systems are popular in Europe. So taking a look at that, but again, understanding the basic chemistry behind UHP is just putting water into an aerosol state so that it increases the surface to mass ratio. But the bottom line is, again, the only thing that water does is cool the environment. It has nothing to do with attacking the fuel leg. Whereas if you had class A foam, especially in CAFs, we know we're going to interface that fuel component. That's where our carcinogens are, is in the fuel, and start to scrub that environment down.
Okay. Thanks for that context. I mean, I think we can always learn from other places around the world, and especially learn from someone like yourself, Gary, that is, you know, hands-on in the weeds, doing the experimentation yourself, as well as teaching young, bright minds. And I'd like to kind of ask you a sort of final follow-up question here is, what would you say to the fire department that's on the fence, or someone that's thought about this but is maybe worried about backlash or what other people might say or cost, to someone that has thought about this but is not there yet, what would you say to them to get over the hump and embrace this concept?
I would have them engage subject matter experts. And again, that's the big piece of the AFOAM authority. You can go onto our webpage, you can send a message. It literally comes to my email address and I'll respond. I actually had that happen a few months ago. A person was dealing with peat moss fire, well-entrenched peat moss fire, and was struggling with getting some agent out there, and he and I chatted, and you know, it ended up working. So, you know, reach out. Also to read. A lot of the stuff that I have learned is from just research, getting on the internet and searching and reading and, you know, pulling stuff apart. Know what you're looking for, you know, class A foam, CAFs, those kind of things. And there's a lot of information out there. And like I said, a lot of it is from overseas. You see a lot of stuff that's done in Europe, the Asian area as well, because they do use CAFs in Asia, especially China. As you well know, Darley sells a lot of products in China. So use those components too, because, you know, those are good science data driven documents. But again, I just think reach out and don't be afraid to ask questions. Come to our symposium. Or reach out to us and we'll bring, you know, the clean work program to you. But don't be afraid, you know, to be a game changer. You know, once upon a time, they complained about making firefighters ride, you know, in the cab and not on the tailboard. And then those cabs became enclosed. And, you know, then the yellow and red stripes came out on the rear end. So it's going to happen. Change is inevitable. And be open-minded about it and take it on. So, you know, it's just the whole... with the European style helmets that are coming into America, you know, there's just some, they just can't get over it. They're going to struggle with it. So I tell my kids that the dinosaurs become extinct.
Don't become the dinosaur and be open to change. Obviously tradition is important, but there's a lot of different things that we can take by learning and sharing from each other. And this is a really important, exciting opportunity because this isn't as widespread as it could be, which to me screams that, you know, winning over some hearts and minds. There's a big opportunity to really make some headway here and continue to keep our first responders safe and not heavily exposed to carcinogens and overall improving fire ground operations.
One thing I'd like to add, you know, going back to tradition, and you hear this quite a bit, you know, there's no organizations more steeped in history tradition than the military. And the military works very hard to preserve those traditions, but they do not wear their traditions on the battlefield. We know that our troops are decked out with the absolute most high-end technology that we can provide. You know, no one today would wear a World War I Doughboy helmet into combat.
No.
So, you know, that component as well. One thing I'd like to add that we've also been looking at, Kevin, is using the Class A CAFs as a decontamination agent on firefighter turnout gear in the post-suppression environment. And we've been using either a portable system or we've actually used, you know, CAFs out of the line before you clean it up. And what we're seeing is an amazing amount of particulate mass that we're pulling off the garment. Once we've sprayed them down with, we prefer dry caps, we recommend dry caps because it's stickier. We let that set for 3 to 5 minutes, let the bubbles stick to the garment. That way the surfactant interchanges with the carcinogens and other contaminants on the garment. And then we use a shot vac, and we shot vac each firefighter. And so instead of rinsing him off and putting all that runoff in the ground, we literally contain it into a shot vac where you can then take the shot vac fire to the fire station, rinse it out, and let that stuff go down the drain where it can be treated. The firefighter's gear is going to be a lot cleaner. And then we teach a self-doffing technique where the firefighter doffs himself. They basically end up putting it right into a big black garbage bag, and their SCBAs and everything should be transported back to the fire station, not in the cab, whether it's in a support vehicle or whatever. And then they should get back to the station and get cleaned up. And again, we've seen some really impressive stuff. If you're interested, we've put some documentation, some videos on the AFOAM Authority Facebook page. It's a private page, but if you're interested in joining, please send a join request. I'd be more than happy to add you. But we've also done some stuff with, as soon as the firefighter comes off of their SCBA air, we insert an APR, and that's from the research that was released in 2017 from Fent, where they used Dawn dish soap to decon the garment, and they stated 85% effective in removing carcinogens. However, you still had this off-gassing of VOCs, these volatile organic compounds. So that's why we insert the APR filter, so that as the firefighter continues to decon, they're not affected by the off-gassing of their gear until they actually have it off. And then, of course, the mask is the last thing to come off, which is no different than in a hazmat incident. If you're wearing a level B suit, last thing comes off is your mask.
All the protocols.
Well, you know what? If you take time and understand you're just trying to keep yourself safe, it's an amazing concept. And again, yep. Europeans have been so far ahead of this that, we really should just go take a look at some of the stuff that they're doing over there and bring it back. So
agreed. And the point I thought about earlier when you're talking about the military and their evolution on the battlefield, someone had told me one time, one of the only places they want an unfair advantage over the competition or the enemy is on the battlefield. And that's through being more prepared and having better technology. And a lot of that has to do with embracing what we know at this moment with the technology available. And it's end of 2021, looking at fire in this context as the enemy. What is everything that we can possibly do to equip first responders to have an unfair advantage over the fire? And I think that means embracing not only new tech, but embracing best practices and new ideas to not only suppress the fire, but continue to keep our first responders safe and not exposed to carcinogens.
Yeah, and safety is not, just your standard fire ground safety. It's also the carcinogen reduction component. And again, using what we call slicers, taking the slicers acronym from International Society of Fire Service, this site approach, but then we stick CAFs on the back of it. We don't necessarily mean CAFs to be compressed air foam. We're using CAFs as the acronym for carcinogen absorbing foaming solution, because that's the chemical action of the Class A foam, is they absorb these carcinogens in that system. And so outside in, scrub as you go. Not only just cool, but scrub as you go.
Yep. So final comments, Gary. I'd love kind of a little 30 to 60 second mic drop, fire hot take. Anything else that you haven't said that you'd want to make anyone in the smart firefighting and whole kind of Darley community realm know about, anything that you want to challenge them with or ideas or questions?
Well, again, to those of you that are open-minded enough, be open-minded and take a look at the data. As you said, you found my research paper online, the one that I did for the National Fire Academy in 2017 in the library. You just simply have to reach Google search, bomb, CAFs, and carcinogen, it'll take you to that. We've expanded upon that with what we're doing. We've made the numbers even more valid. Stuff works. And again, if you understand the chemistry and physics behind Class A foam and CAFs, especially CAFs, it works. And so be open-minded.
Cost, I love that.
Cost of a duty-related firefighter cancer on the average is $500,000. That makes that CAFs unit a lot cheaper.
And not to forget that $500,000 is a human life. So we need to do everything we can. And when we put those numbers in perspective, we need to rethink how we're spending our dollars and put it towards putting our first responders first and taking the best care of them with the best technology and best practices available. So Gary, I've learned more than I knew before this call, class A, class B foams and all things CAFS and using it for this application. So just on behalf of the Smart Firefighting community and Darley and everyone, thank you for what you're doing and keep it up. It's really important work. And I look forward to staying in touch and seeing how it all continues to come to life.
And we'll hopefully see you here in April. Any other thing else, like I said, go to the website, afoam.org, and go ahead and reach out for questions. My email address is gbaum, that's B-A-U-M, at redickfire.com. And redick is R-E-D-D-I-C-K. You can feel free to email me through there as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Gary, for all that you do. And I look forward to seeing you in April. Thank you so much for listening to the Smart Firefighting Podcast today. If you enjoyed what you heard and got any value, please drop us a rating, leave us a comment, or reach out to us on social media. Have a great day, and together we can advance the future of smart firefighting.